The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. What a great intro this program has. Kudos to the staff and putting that together. And a few folks say, you guys have used that entry for like 20 years. I say, yeah, you got a better one? Let me hear it. It's just very appropriate, I guess, you know. Welcome to the Money Talk Show, Friday afternoon weekly wrap-up. Markets were positive today, which is a good thing, you know. You're hearing a little bit of buzz, and a lot of folks are talking with me on the telephone and in the office about concern about stocks being really, really high. Well, I think they're referring mostly to U.S. stocks. Emerging markets and foreign stocks, I think, are not really, really high. How high are U.S. stocks? I don't know. I don't have the ability to predict exactly those peaks and valleys. Attempted it when I was younger and didn't work too well. Usually somebody younger talks like that until they try it over a 15-year period and realize how hard it is to do. So you will find that the vast majority, 98% of people with my level of experience, close to 40 years, will not attempt to predict markets or time them, but manage money around the behavior based on the understanding of the risk level and need for the money of the client. Got a couple of advisor tales for you tonight. This is a little part of the show that I just share something that happened to me during the day talking to a customer, and I usually mention it to them. So if he's listening tonight, he's a good client of mine. He'll know I'm talking about him. I won't mention his name, of course. But they're just little things, either a topic that came up I thought would be helpful to you all, or maybe just an idea or a move right now that would be a good thing to do. So we try to share some of our actual work experience during the day, because that's our full-time job anyway. The radio is our part-time, end-of-the-day thing. The numbers here, as usual, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Podcasts available at 790business.com. If you check out the podcast, check out any dates that are a Tuesday or a Wednesday evening, initially anyway. We're here 5 nights a week. There's a lot there. Because those are the nights when we have two hosts on the show. Tuesday night, Don and his daughter. And Wednesday night, myself and my son, Nathan. And I just think having the difference in age adds a variety to the topic, I think. I'm afraid of risk now. I wasn't afraid of risk when I was Nathan's age. I was excited by it because volatility and ups and downs in the market is what he wants at his age and is what everyone wants who's young, who's trying to build wealth. But once you get older and you've built some wealth and got close to where you want to be, the game changes. And I'm 58 years old. And I like all of my money is in an apartment building. My clients love this one. It's an apartment building, meaning it has constant predictable rents. Those are called dividends, usually 3% or better, or I'm not interested in the investment. All of my investments, almost all, occasionally there's an exception, have to pay a 3% dividend or I'm not interested in it. I'd also try to buy things out of favor. Like right now, I think energy is probably that number one category. So take a look at if you're looking to further diversify or add a small piece to a larger portfolio. If you happen to have not had any energy or agriculture, it's been a tough haul for those two, which is why I like the dividend. You get the dividend no matter what, right? Rising interest rates, which is what we're facing here, should jack the prices of food and energy. It hasn't really happened yet, but it should be in the cards as part of the normal cycle. Foreign investments have done much better this year than the U.S. stock market, yet most people would not guess that. And this is quite a fascinating thing to me. And it takes, 10 years plus, maybe 20 years of experience to see this happening on a daily basis, in that the perception of the average person on the street is very inaccurate. Everyone that I ask, what's the best stock market in the world this year, everyone says USA. wrong. It's the lowest performer. All of Europe and emerging markets are up. I have an emerging markets fund that's up almost 30% this year. It's made 30% in gain plus a dividend of 5%. So it's going to make, it could be going for 30% plus year this year. That doesn't last long. The U.S. stock market historically is the best performing in the world, and I don't think that's going to change. So therefore, I think over the long run, we probably want to have more than half of our stocks in U.S. stocks and the rest overseas. But when interest rates are rising here in the U.S., that's the time, I think, to be more foreign-minded, I guess, you know, the foreign intrigue, if you will. So if your portfolio doesn't include any foreign investments, either by your request or by coincidence, it's not too late to add them. I think the best prices are past us now for this cycle, but surely not. What I can say about U.S. stocks is that one thing I absolutely know, they're not cheap, they're not on sale. So if you have a big old chunk of cash right now, I would look somewhere else than to chime in right now with a lot of money, you know, with hopes of making a good gain in the next 6 to 9 months. We're overdue for a correction, and it usually happens in the month of September, actually. Is one of the tough September and October are usually when it occurs, and that's usually the springboard to the best 6 months in the calendar. October, November, December, January, February, March, usually. Usually, in this case, means about 80% of the time. That's pretty rare in the financial world. Statistics like that that we share with you, seldom are they so, the word is correlated. It means it's pretty likely to happen. You know, the odds are, you know, if a correlation rate is, you know, 0.12, it means it's 12% likely out of 100 chances. If the correlation rate is 88, it means it's highly likely. 100% means it's guaranteed to happen the same way. So foreign investments are have been underperformers for a while now, and that's usually one of the signals to watch them for a while. I have some interesting research in front of me done by one of the major insurance companies, and they do a great job with it. It's just interesting to note how the cycles just repeat themselves over and over and over again. And I believe that we this year is the beginning of a cycle where overseas stocks, not bonds, should outperform U.S. stocks for a year or two. And then I'll be back on my usual I Love America kick because usually these cycles, I'm looking at them all the way back to 1971, they last 2 years. That's about it. And after that, it's back to U.S. dominance. Do I think it's the best market in the world? Yeah, I do. I do. And it is the core of most equity accounts. But right now, less U.S. and more overseas than ever before, in my opinion, would be the good mix to have. When I began my journey as a young financial advisor a very long time ago, I was amazed to learn that 75% of the stocks in the world were American companies. And I remember being proud of that, you know. So, wow, you know, I'm a young guy getting going, and I was all excited. I still am, as you know. But I remember that time and just being amazed by that fact. You know, we were just one country. The world's a big world. And 75% of the companies that you could buy stock in were American companies, you know. Today, it's just the opposite. It's flipped. It's only 25%. And 75% of the stocks in the world are not American companies. So if you want to be investing in a modern, hip manner, you must have a global footprint. This is something my clients hear a lot from me. You must have a global footprint. It's a big world today. If any one country could end up in real turmoil with this threat of nuclear attacks and terrorism. So if you have a big pile of money, I think you need to own the world. You need to own the world, not the whole world. We don't have any investments in the Middle East or any of those type of countries. There are a lot of European nations that are good, safe places to invest. And one of my styles is, and you may try to adapt this if you like, when I look at emerging markets, if you're young, you want growth stocks there. There are different kinds of emerging markets funds. But at my age, I want the safest companies in the emerging markets. And they're staple companies like food companies, utilities, things of that nature. And there are some ETFs today, exchange-traded funds, that specialize in those type of categories. There's one, the symbol is DVYE, if you want to take a look at that one. It's an interesting conservative income fund, pays about a 5% dividend. Conservative income fund in a very aggressive area of the world. It's the emerging markets are probably, out of four categories, they're the second most aggressive. Frontier markets, where no average person belongs investing, purely speculation, you know, by corporations and company developers, things of that nature, would be called frontier markets. Then you have emerging markets. Then you have foreign, which would be Europe, in my mind, or Europe-ish stuff, Australia, Asia. And then you have, you know, Latin America is part of the world, too. These are called regions. Limit those purchases, if you're doing it yourself, to 20% of your investments. Regular mutual funds, maybe 10%. Individual stocks, don't have any, please. But if you choose to not listen, keep it at 5%. One of the fascinating thing we talk all about when you limit your money to one investment, you take a unique kind of risk that people don't talk about enough. And it's just a simple risk that you absolutely picked the wrong one. Now, of all the stocks I've said over the years that you might want to consider, you know, if you're going to choose to not listen, just kidding, it was GE. And now I know there are clients of mine who fool around with stocks a little bit. They know they don't want their larger accounts being handled that way, but they'll still fool around with it on the side, you know, and they chat with me about them, and I help them a little bit, get involved a little bit with it to help them with that. But it's not, they don't want their larger account, you know, handled that way. And so the stocks are the most risky investment in any portfolio. It's how we measure risk. And a moderate portfolio, for example, would be about 60% stocks today. Some conservative might be only 30% or 25%. The good news is if you're talking to a seasoned financial person and if you're looking to hire someone, that's who you want, right? They should be able to customize. I know it's very easy in my office to customize any account to any particular set of circumstances or need that a client might have. There are no real, one-size-fit-all type of programs in the customization anyway. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business, and we will be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Yeah. We're going to work on that one. I'll let you know later. Pardon me. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. Over the past 60 years, listen to this one. When the value of the stocks, U.S. stocks, have reached the level they're at right now, history says that the following 10 years, the average return of stocks are about 5%. I think that's pretty close to what we might see the next 10 years. If you find that hard to believe, remember that there have been 10-year periods where the S&P 500 had zero gain for 10 years. If you had a dividend, at least you could buy some more shares and end up with more shares in the end and more dividend income. But not more value in your original purchase. So I think that's fascinating. It's half. History says that purchases of the U.S. stock market at the levels they're at right now historically will have a half the return of normal. So I know prices are not cheap. Are they at the high point? I don't know. I don't ever know. Market bottoms are easy. Capitulation is the thing, you see. The last market in 08, 09, I had other professionals that left the business. It was so bad. Telling me that it was different this time. The stock market will never come back up. And they were completely wrong. And they were professionals. They were in the field. And they were quitting. It was so ugly and so difficult back then. It never works that way. The last 12 times the stock market has corrected, it fully recovered every single time. No exceptions. Since 1923. So, now, get ready. We're overdue for this, folks, okay? Someone's going to hear in the next market correction, someone say that it's different this time. They're not going to know that it has a 12-0 track record, and the person that's spewing this nonsense probably doesn't know it either. And someone will then panic and be the person who was in my office a month and a half ago who said, you were talking about me the other day. And I said, how could that be? I didn't know you yet. And she said, no, you were talking about someone like me. And I said, oh, are you the 401k person? She said, yes. Twice in 20 years, she panicked and sold out all her 401k accounts when they were at half their value. She lost $200,000 she'll never get back. All she had to do was do nothing, and she wouldn't have lost a penny. All she had to do was do nothing, and she couldn't do it. Amazing, huh? How simple that can be and so powerful. Think about it. A simple decision like that at the wrong time on any market can create that sort of turmoil. And I understand how it happens. I've seen some very smart people fall prey to it. I have never fallen prey to that panic type mentality. I don't believe I will. That's not my nature. I think that's one of the reasons I've been doing this for so long. And when clients need someone who's determined and thick-headed at a time like that, boy, am I the right guy. Only because history tells me we're dealing with an item here that has a 12-0 track record that when it's low in value, it's a great buy. Then how could it be a great time to sell it when it's low this time? It just doesn't make any sense. So if you study history, and you should, you'll find that there are opportunities, and they only come along about once every 6 or 7 years, and we are due for one now. Hopefully it won't be one of these devastating, you know, event-driven ones, meaning a terrorism or economic meltdowns. Usually there's one industry that causes the problem. You know, we had the banking industry, we had the tech industry meltdown, the bubble there in 1999. Usually there's a single industry that does that. War, believe it or not, or threat of war, tends to make economies go. A lot of money spent at a time like that. Not that I am for that at all, ever. But if it does happen, it tends to not be bad for your investments. Just the opposite, believe it or not, which is kind of a funny thought. Not funny, but frightening, actually. And sounds wrong. But a lot of money is spent. And actually, in anticipation of it, usually, is what happens. And hopefully, it won't happen, right? But again, long-term investing is an important process for everyone in their life. Interesting statistics on the stock market. How about this one? 87% of a bond's performance will be attributed to its starting yield. And right now, bond yields are the lowest they've ever been in history. So that means if you buy traditional type bonds, now my clients all own bonds, but they don't own any of these. If you bought any of the traditional type bonds or indexes, the current yield is 2.55. History says that should be about 80% of the return, which means that investment is doomed to only have a 3% return over time. So if you're okay with that, maybe it plays a conservative role in your portfolio, and that would be okay. Otherwise, traditional type long-term bonds, corporate governments are, one of the most dangerous things to own right now. Interest rates are the lowest they've been in history, and they have an awful long way they can go. Pardon me. Anybody having a tough allergy week? I'm having a lot of sneezing, itchy eyes, and all that kind of stuff. Appreciate your patience. The Federal Reserve currently is predicting for this year, by the end of the year, to raise two or three times raise interest rates, and the following year, three or four times. So that's seven interest rate increases. If they go a quarter point a time, that means they'll raise interest rates. They'll double interest rates. That's a big increase. I think a non-financial person says a 1% or 2% increase, that's no big deal. It is on top of two. If the rates were already 8 and they went up 1, I agree. But if they're 2 and they go up by 1, that's a 50% increase, and that will have a jarring effect on things. It's not going to be a great environment for those bonds I talked about, and doesn't automatically, history says that rising interest rates don't kill returns in a country where the rates are rising, but it stifles them a bit, you know? Historically, it probably cuts them down to maybe half. The last time we had rising rates here, the S&P 500 made 5% per year during that two-year period, but all the overseas markets went cuckoo like they're doing this year. It's the same pattern. And I do think it should last another year or two. We'll be watching it closely and talking about it. Emerging markets are a very strange area, and I think that's a part of your portfolio you could be without at times, and I often go without that. But the general overseas Europe kind of stuff, I do think most of us should have as a standard, you know, fixed part of our mix. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. And, of course, we have podcasts now. And, again, check out any of the shows that are on a Tuesday or a Wednesday date because they will include the young folk, which we think are great. Their energy is very, very exciting both here on the show and in the office. And I think to myself often, could I think that fast when I was 35? Wow, that's amazing to me. The good news is, guess what? I don't have to think fast. At my age, I just have to think well. No speed requirements at my age, just that you do it well, that's all. But when you're young, you got to move, baby. You know, your life is very busy. Like Nathan, he's a young father. He's got a couple of properties. Bought them in the last 3 or 4 years. smart young man, listened to his father, the financial guy, bought real estate when the prices were low. I remember he and I chatting that everyone his age told him he was out of his mind because anyone had bought real estate before that got killed. Yeah, that's why the prices are low now. You know, every time it's no different, folks. When you want to buy anything, you want to buy it when the people that own it don't like it, when they're complaining about it. Like right now, real estate's done very well. People like it and they're happy about it. So I would think it's not the, you know, the low price on sale opportunity, you know, there either. So these things are very emotional, and people's behavior patterns will oftentimes tell you a lot more than any kind of nerd might. As far as, you know, what might be occurring going forward, people's behavior will tell you quite a bit. There are some pretty fascinating indicators in the marketplace, like odd lot theory and things of that nature, that just track the purchases of small investors. And you, if you see I just saw a chart of this, your eyes would pop out open. It just clearly shows that average investors pile in at the last minute and buy at the top a lot, and then sell at the bottom. And you see institutional managers, because they buy for different reasons. For example, if I'm managing an account for you and it's meant to be moderate, which means 50-50 stocks and bonds, and the stock market is low, we're gonna buy more of that when it's on sale, right? Same thing with bonds, same thing with overseas, that sort of thing. So it depends on, you know, how sophisticated, I guess, your system is that you're using to handle your money. Talk about energy. Energy is an opportunity right now. IGE might be a index, not an index, but a natural resources energy exchange-traded fund. Nice little dividend, 3% or so. ExxonMobil looks fascinating at the moment. Buying something that's out of favor that I believe has to come back in value, I believe that the energy sector will rebound in price. It's already doing it as we speak. Just like I would believe Exxon would. But I have more faith in the sector or an entire industry that I do any one company. You know, a company like ExxonMobil, if they had a terrible spill somewhere where they were found to be very neglectful and it really ruined a lot of nature and stuff, I mean, that can ruin a company today, I think. So where that's not going to happen if you own an industry versus one company. And that's where the risk difference really comes into play. This is the Money Talk Show, and we'll be back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Hey, I'm looking at an ad here that says 8% annual annuity return. That's not true. I don't know how to get. They're going to say I'm too literal. The word return is there. It says clearly says 8%. Return. It should say 8% payout. See how this works is, and this is called a fixed immediate annuity, and I'm not even against this product. I'm against it being advertised this way. It means if you give them $100,000, the money's principal's gone forever, you never see it again, and they'll give you $8,000 a year for life in return. That's 8% on $100,000, but it's not 8% return because you're using your own money. And how you know that is if you do this with a cash investment, and you get your $8,000 per year, half of it's not taxed, which is a nice thing, you know. But to advertise it, I meet people who have these things, and they tell me they're getting 8% interest on the money, and they're not. They're getting less than half of that. The rest of the payment is their own money coming back to them. You know, so to advertise it this way, and this is my problem primarily with the insurance industry, they seem to be, as an industry, comfortable wording things in sneaky ways, and I don't like it. Really don't like it. I'm always been bothered by it. There's no room for sneaky wording in the financial business. We need to be trusted professionals like doctors and do the right thing for people. So anyway, watch out for that. I'm not against immediate annuities. That's what that is. Matter of fact, I talk about them often. It's a private pension. I actually talk about it as being an interesting tool to use. But you have to understand, if you were to call up and invest your money in what I'm looking at right here, it clearly says 8% return, and it is not. It is about half of that, maybe even, it could be as low as 2%. Again, is it a bad tool? No, but it's wrong to go into anything that is paying you half of what you think it is. I have family members who come up to me with a glass of wine at Christmas time and tell me they have an annuity IRA at the bank that's paying them 5%, and they don't have that. There's no such thing. The confusion in the annuity game is mind-blowing. I had never met anyone yet that owned one of these things that knew what it was or understood how it worked. And anyone I met who claims to know doesn't. They're wrong. It's because of one of these things. For example, the family member who tells me they have a 5% payout who doesn't have it is because they told him if you want to annuitize the account someday, which means give up your principal, we'll give you 5% payout, which is probably 2% interest and 3% his own money. But the client thinks they're getting 5% interest on their money or 5% gains, and it's not the case at all. And can somebody please stop them from advertising it this way? This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790. Can we say hi to Mike on line one? Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Stephen?
Hi, Mike.
Before I go into my question, on those annuities, don't they give you the principal back at an X amount of years after 10 or 15 or 20 years? I don't have one. I wouldn't
have
either.
Some of them have that option, but then they charge you for that.
Charge you a price for bringing the principal back?
Correct, yeah.
How much?
I don't have it. It's very complicated.
Okay, well, they give you 8%, and then they give you a small fee. I don't know.
Right.
But anyway, that wasn't the question. I'm not an annuity type of guy.
Yeah. I think there's some people that can be okay.
My question, before I forget, I did write some things down, is on interest rates. And now I just got back from California 3 months, and they just charge those houses she says every year it's going up 5, 10%. If the Fed did raise aggressively, like you said, a couple hundred basis points, at least even in the next year or two, you couldn't even sell your house or even buy one. As far as that goes,
it would slow things down. Sure, it would.
Okay, so that's exactly that's what you want. I'd like to buy, and I don't want to buy. It's leveraged. It's all leveraged with They bring the interest rate down to whatever 2.5, 3, 3.5, and then they just jack the price of the house. It's kind of a
right. And as you clearly understand, the interest rates is inversion to the price of the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So as rates rise, it will affect it. Could they? What type of black swan or something could happen where they had to raise it up 3 or 4 points? I don't want a banking stock, so I would like to see the interest rates go up.
Yeah. Very often the Fed just overreacts because they're being pressured by everybody. Because everyone thinks that's all we got to do. It's the perfect medicine, so let's do it. Do it more, and they get pressured and they give in rather than doing it gradually. And that's what happened last time, I think. Rose 17 times in 2.5 years they raised rates.
Oh. Because of inflation?
Yeah, 17 times they did it. They took action.
Why did they do it? Because of inflation or some problems?
Yeah, because of perception of the economy. It just went too far. It's like giving a sick child too much medicine. It make him sick for a different reason.
Okay, we'll see what happens. But so you understand it too then. I understand it. I finally got the revelation, but it took some time. I'm a slow learner. But, all they do bring the rates down, jack the price of the house up. Simple as that.
They
kind of look
at
an average what people make and what they can afford.
Anything else, Mike?
That's it. Okay. Have a great
thanks. Night. Appreciate it. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business. That's one of the most basic fundamentals in the financial world that Mike's talking about there. That is that interest rates and the price of houses tends to invert somewhat. Now, does that mean that if interest rates are rising slowly, could your house still go up in value? Yes, but it will go up in value less than it would have gone up had rates not been rising. So don't interpret that conversation as rates rise, the value of your house is going to plummet. I don't believe that happens. Real estate prices tend to plateau. Stock prices peak like mountaintops, then they break and they crash down, right? But if you look at charts of real estate values, what you see is a rise and a plateau, a rise and a plateau, and a rise and a plateau, generally speaking. Now, there are always isolated markets. The last real estate debacle we had, they fell pretty fast that time. I'm sure someone's thinking that one, and they'd be correct. But over the long period of time, 50, 60, 80 years, all that records have been kept, real estate tends to surge and plateau. Makes sense that we're talking primarily about residential properties that people live in their homes, so although it is an investment, we don't look at it as much as we would a pure investment, right? Because it's your home and you like the yard and you like your neighbors and all that stuff and you love people there. So there's other things going on in a home. So it tends to, they tend to not be as volatile. But any given moment, any investment can surprise you and behave in a manner that you don't expect. That's why you can't have too much in any one. We've all heard the old "Don't put all your eggs in one basket." Don always says one of his aunts told him, not only should you not put all your eggs in one basket, don't leave your baskets all in one house. Put one basket in the garage, one basket in the shed, and bring one basket over to my house, Donnie. And that's how Don explained diversification when we started the show. It's great. Another great one he had was, and it was his grandmother, I think, that told him these things. He said, if you never invested before and you're learning, don't dive in too fast. It's something you're not that familiar with. It's like hot soup. Sip around the edges. Don't gulp it down. You'll burn your throat. Right? Sip it. Test it first. How does it taste? Is it too hot? Don't gulp it down without checking it out first, So investing is that way, too. If you're new to it, be very careful and try to seek someone who has 10 years of experience, minimum, in my opinion, in order to give investment advice in a real solid way. Now, there are younger people around that help and work in our office, but whatever they're doing with the client is being decided upon by senior people, and that they, in the younger stages of their relationships, they are really a liaison. Professional liaison, service person, answer questions, things of that nature. They're not making the big, big, big decisions just yet. Eventually, they will be the only ones making those decisions, and the Money Talk Show will roll on. 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. A few more notes for you for tonight. Check out the podcast. I like this theory. If you're looking to buy new investments, you got some cash, I want something that is down in price now, I believe must come back up in price, and it pays a 3% dividend while I'm waiting. You find me anything like that's energy right now. You find me anything like that, and I like that a lot. I already bought some more of that recently. Client conversation on the phone today. This is a great one. Guy calls me up. Name is Bob. Bob W. If he's listening, he knows I'm talking about him. Kind of in transition, about to retire. Young guy retiring, did very smart about things. Called me up and says, "Hey, pal," he says, "got no income on paper this year. Retired, got a year in between collecting Social Security. He's living off some cash he has. He's building a house, so he wanted to build a house himself that would save him a ton of money, so he didn't work. Because, you saved 40, 50 grand building a house himself because he has those skills, So on paper this year, he has little to no income, and he's about 60 years old, 58, about my age. And so what he asked his accountant to do was figure out how much of his regular IRA he could convert to Roth and pay no tax at all on it. Normally, you'd pay tax on every dime. But if you happen to have a strange year like this client, Bob, because he's doing very well, he's very successful, but on paper for this year, he's going to have little to no taxable income. That's an opportunity to convert regular IRA money to Roth and pay little to no tax at all on it. Now, converted IRAs to Roth must remain invested for 5 years minimum before you can access it and have it tax-free. So if that, as long as that jives with your anticipated need for the money, 5 years or longer, it's a great thing. So if you have an unfortunate circumstance where you're out of work maybe, it's a terrible thing, and I wish you to grow out of that as fast as possible, obviously. But let's say, for example, you had an off year like that, and you have some IRAs hanging around. Talk to a good tax person about the lower end of the tax scale. And if you're a married couple, you can take probably up to about $15,000 or more, because you've got maybe mortgage deduction for your interest and personal exemptions and things of that nature. So there are some opportunities there if you happen to either have little to no income on paper for a good reason, like this fella, it was part of his plan, or if it unfortunately is not what you wished, didn't plan it, it's a good way to take advantage of a bad situation and do something that might help you out down the road. Wouldn't it be nice if 10 years down the road that block of money you took out is all tax-free now when it normally wouldn't have been? It means you have a third more. So if it counts 10,000, it's like having 13 or 14. So it's just a way to take advantage of a bad situation. This particular client, it was not a bad situation. It was by design that he would be in that situation. But he's clever enough to know that he smelled an opportunity there and was just calling to check on that. And I said, yes, absolutely, go ahead and do that. That's a great idea. Another great way of using Roth IRAs, I think, and there's many ways to use them. They're very interesting. Couples my age, saying last 10 years of working, is when most of us save all the money for retirement we'll ever save, is in the last 10 years of our working career. So for me, that's like the next 10 years. Makes sense, right? Kids are grown, houses are paid down. Hopefully you're at peak earnings, you've developed some skills over time. So that's usually when the most of the money is saved by most people. That will tell you that whatever they have in retirement or for retirement, the vast majority of it they did save in the last 10 years of their working career. So if that's your case, don't feel too bad about it, but see if we can't motivate you to get going. This is the Money Talk Show, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bobe, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Hey, I got some other podcasts for you here. Of course, we have our podcasts available, but this program is objective, so we're not going to tell you just about our. There are many of them all over the place. Great way to learn today about it. Check out Planet Money. Planet Money, also Bad With Money, that's a good one. Death, Sex, and Money. These are podcasts all about money in real life and day-to-day. We tend to deal with it in the super nerd world, you know, portfolios and stuff. But there's a lot more to understanding money, about discipline, budgeting, you know, things of that nature. So if you have an educational interest in this sort of thing, read Kiplinger Magazine is a great one. Great gift to give to young people this Christmas. Give your 30-year-old a subscription to a financial magazine as a gift. Kiplinger's did a piece many years ago, and I just love Kiplinger's. It's very simple, but I'm simple, so that makes sense to me. Jives well with my style. Okay, they did a psychological evaluation of, you know, thousands of us, of people, consumers, and they came to this, and this is just an opinion, so I found it was interesting. It doesn't have to be, you know, this isn't the solve-all, end-all, but I think it's pretty accurate myself. And they said that there were four categories, and all of us fall into basically four categories of psychology of money. Isn't that interesting, huh? The psychology of money. First category, they labeled money avoidance. And it says, I do not deserve a lot of money when others have less than me. Well, I wish everyone to do best, but I'm trying to do as well as I can. That's not me, that's for sure. rich people are greedy. Silly. It's not okay to have more than you need. Nonsense. How can you help another person if you don't have more than you need? Right? If everyone only had what they need, that would be the end of all giving, all charity, all helping each other. You have to have more than you need for yourself in order to help someone else, right? So this is a tough category. These people are impossible to coach with money, I found. People get rich by taking advantage of others. If you think all that stuff, you're doomed financially. You'll never get anywhere. But that's called money avoidance. Money worship. The more money will make you happier. Wrong. You can never have enough money. Wrong. There's a number that you want to know. Come and see me. I'll sit down. I'll tell you what the number is. You get to that number, you have enough. You don't need to worry, even think about it anymore. Money buys freedom. Can be a little truth to that one. Money status. I will not buy something unless it is new. That's not me. Your self-worth equals your net worth. That's not me. Poor people are lazy. That's silly. If something is not considered the best, it's not worth buying. That's not me. I drive a 9-year-old car, so it's definitely not me. So I'm not in that category either. So money avoidance, money worship, money status. Now, here's the last category. If I'm not in here, I wonder where I belong. It's called money vigilance. Now, if you know me, I'm sure you think, yeah, that's Stephen. It is important to save for a rainy day. Absolutely, I believe that. You should always look for the best deal, even if it takes more time. I agree. If you cannot pay cash for something, you should not buy it. Most things other than real estate, I agree completely with that. I pay cash for cars, cash for boats, haven't had a credit card balance in 20 years, and plan on being debt-free very, very soon. I would be a nervous wreck if I did not have an emergency fund. Yes, Steve Bove would be a nervous wreck if he did not have an emergency fund. Half the world lives without one every day. No savings for emergency. 47% of people in this country do not have $1,000 saved for an emergency to fix their car, get through a bad period, help a friend. Now, many of that is legit. Younger people getting going. A lot of it's older people who maybe have spent their assets, you know. But check out Kiplinger's. This is a fascinating little thing. And it asks you to rate, you know. So you read this yourself and say, do you honestly believe this? Do you really believe that you don't deserve anything if you have more than someone else? I don't believe that. That doesn't mean we don't believe in helping others. That's not true at all. rich people are greedy. You know, all these stereotypes are always wrong, folks. No matter what they're on, at any end of the scale, they're always wrong. So anyway, it's a great way. If you're trying to teach younger people about money, I didn't have this in front of me when I was teaching my young people about money, but it would have been very helpful because I can now see where my three children fit into the category. What I will only say to you is because I think it's appropriate is the one that you know who's on the show with me, who's in the same field as me, falls into the same category as me in this category, money vigilance. He's the financial advisor. It makes sense, right? If the other categories all have all these emotional, distorted, warped psychologies involved in there. You know, imagine believing that every rich person is greedy. I don't even know how you define greedy. You know, I mean, I want a little more. I want to help my kids. I have three grandchildren. College is expensive. I want to help them with that. Is that greedy? It's more than for just myself. You know, I don't know. Some people call it greedy. Some people wouldn't, you know. Anyway, check out Kiplinger's. If you are more sophisticated than that, take a look at Barron's Magazine. What a great publication that is. That's the best publication I have ever read in the financial business all my life. Wall Street Journal, very good also. Investor's Business Daily years ago. I don't know if it's even still around. Headed by William O'Neill. If you have a bunch of mutual funds in a 401k plan, I want to introduce a new term to you. And we're going to start this conversation just now, a little tease. We're going to head out of here soon. But next week, I'm going to try to pick up on this a couple of times. And over the next couple of weeks, talk about a word called overlap. Overlap is when you pick mutual funds, different ones, because they have different names or labels. And you think you're getting diversification because you didn't put it all in one, right? I got three different ones. Well, if you have growth and income, balanced, S&P 500, and global growth, those funds have about half of the investments are exactly the same. So you probably have half the diversification that you think you have. So tune in next week. Of course, Monday night, Don Soa solo. Tuesday night, Don and Donna Grace. And Wednesday and Friday, I'm here. And also, don't forget to check out your liability insurance. Make sure you have a personal umbrella policy for $1 million if you own a home or have any sort of assets to lose. Have a good, safe weekend, and we'll be back on Monday. It's money that matters.